Now, for the main event. Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's chair speaker. He has traveled all the way from the metropolis of Tulare, California. Paid for his own gas to get here. He's got a sobriety date of 2/13/2012, which means he just celebrated last month. His favorite AA slogan, or his slogan for life, is every day is a good day, some days are just better than others. I want to introduce Jack E. from Tulare. Come on out, Jack.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome all the newcomers, people from Pine and Ever New Visions, and it's wonderful to see people here that are willing to take themselves to a program, because it took me till I was 50 years old to get the nerve to go ahead and do that, and I probably needed a long time before that. Like you said, my sobriety date, my name's Jack. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/13/12, my last drunk was about a week before that. I remember my first drunk, and I have some friends that I came into this program with, and after I went to that recovery center, the first meeting I went to, two of my best friends were sitting in the meeting with the Teamsters Alcohol Rehabilitation Program. It's called TARP. And I work for a company that is union affiliated, and that is the program that I went through. And when I got to walk into the room and see two of my best friends that I grew up with, that was made a lot easier for me to accept the fact that I could stay in these rooms and try to get better. And plus, my friends wouldn't let me leave anyway, so that was kind of the one guy's about 6'5", and the other one's a lot smaller than me, but he's pretty tough. But let me start with my experience is I grew up in Tulare. I lived there my whole life. I was always active. I had a good family. That their alcohol wasn't allowed in our house. My dad was an alcoholic, and I never seen my dad drunk until I was 18 years old. But my mom didn't allow it in the house, and I literally mean that, because I know a few times my dad tried to bring alcohol in the house, and my mom break a lot of dishes. I went to school at Sundell School, a little country school. I had an older brother and an older cousin, but my cousin's dad passed away at a young age, so my mom and dad raised him, so I consider him more my brother than he is my cousin. And they were pretty ornery, so if I wasn't fighting with somebody else, I was fighting with them from a young age. And I always had to try to keep up with them. So, and by saying that is they probably started drinking little freshmen, sophomores in high school. I was only in 6th, 7th grade. So to keep up with my older brothers, I wanted to get along. I wanted to hang out with them and stuff, and that's the way they'd let me hang out if I did what they did. But I didn't do it because they were doing it. I did it because I wanted to do it after I did it the first time. My first experience, I'll just go through a little experience with alcohol. My first experience with alcohol was not even drinking alcohol. It was, I lived out in the country so we could ride our bikes, and I see Ronnie Haney sitting back there, and he grew up out by where I grew up. We could actually take our shotguns, fishing poles and everything, and go hunting and fishing and everything out in the country. And I never forget, we was walking, me and one of my friends was coming down a ditch, and there was a box, and I kicked the box. Well, it was a case of beer that some of the older kids that played baseball with us and stuff had stuck there in the ditch. And me and my friend, we started, we weren't into drinking it, so we started shaking the cans up, throwing them up there and watching them pop and spin and shooting them with the shotguns and stuff. And And it was real funny because today I work with one of those guys, and, you know, it says more will be revealed. And I was talking to him one day, and he said, you know, we always wondered where that case of beer went. He said, because, you know, we went back to get it that night, and it was gone. We thought somebody just stole it and went and drank it. He said, but no, you guys went out and tore it, got rid of it. So, but a lot of good times. I grew up in a family that I never went without. My dad had a business from the time I was probably 12 years old until I left and went to college and went in the military. So we had to work for what we got, but we never did go without, you know. So I was fortunate enough to have a good family and was supported well by them, and I supported them well. You know, I never missed work. I've always been a hard worker. I worked with my dad, played sports. I went to high school, Tulare Union High School. Wasn't a bad athlete. Played three different sports. I played football, wrestled, baseball. And so as long as I played sports, my dad didn't. He would say, as long as you stay in sports, you don't have to work. Well, you know, I'm going to stay playing because, I mean, I don't want to have to go work every weekend. So, but I enjoyed my father. He passed away in 2008. And like I said earlier, I only seen him get drunk two times in my life. And that was one when I turned 18. He asked me if I wanted to go drink beer with him. And I couldn't understand. I'm just kind of jumping around here. But I went to that rehab that I went to, and they told me that once you were an alcoholic, you could never drink again. And my dad, he could drink. He could, you know, so I don't know, as the big book says, you know, I don't know if he's just a heavy drinker or he's an alcoholic. I mean, it's not for me to judge him or know or answer that question, but I did have to come home and ask my mom, how could Dad just drink a few beers and stop? And because I couldn't grasp this program until I got that answer, because the priest that was at that rehab told me, yeah, you ain't gonna never get this program because you won't listen. And and it was that was holding me back, you know, thinking about my dad being able to drink a few beers. And you know, so when I got home, my dad couldn't read or write. I had to read the newspaper to him. I had to read the Bible to him. I had to, when it came to education, my dad had to go to work from the time he was very young because his father died. And so my dad didn't learn how to read or write. And I asked my mom when I come back, I said, how come Dad can drink a couple beers and not drink no more? They tell me I got to find a higher power. And how can he do this? And she said, you kids are your dad's higher power. She said, your dad knows that he couldn't give you what he wants to give you if he kept drinking, if he got drunk. So after she told me that, it kind of made sense to me why my dad could do it. I'll go back high school, first drink, freshman year. I got drunk, end up in flower bed like most people, outside my friend's house. We was playing Yahtzee, drinking beer and vodka. His dad was gone for the weekend. That was my first drunk. And then there was a lot of them in between, you know, because I played football, knew most cheerleaders. So they would always ask me to be Santa Claus for Christmas time, you know. And I didn't care. I was always outgoing and fun-loving and everything. But the only thing about it is me and them cheerleaders, in between each house, we were getting drunk. You know, and then it was foggy and you couldn't hardly see. And, you know, after I woke up, you know, and thought about it as I got sober, and I think about some of them things that I did when I was drinking. You know, headlines say, captain of football team and cheerleaders killed in foggy crash, and they've been drinking, and why they're going to little kids' houses playing Santa Claus and the elves, you know. And I thought, man, some of the crazy things we did. Another one, I was on the board with Teamsters Union for 14, 15 years, and so I get to go to different conventions, and went to a convention in Hawaii, got drunk and run the rental car through Kevin Costner's cement wall in a gated community. You know, not most people can't say they've done something like that. Then everybody wanted to go fishing, and They had a big koi pond in the hotel, you know, and everybody said, let's go fishing. I said, well, why do we got to go fishing? We can just dive in that swimming pool there and catch what we want. So I woke up the next morning with a koi fish in my bathtub, and I don't even remember doing it. You know, that's just the kind of stuff we do when we drink, you know, and I don't think I've ever, you know, I mean, I got some scrapes and stuff through growing up. But when I think about all the times that I got into fights and into trouble and, you know, bar fights and everything else, it always related to drinking. You know, it was always, if I wasn't drinking, I got along with everybody. But if I started drinking, I always seemed to, that crowd would start coming your way. And which was kind of fun at the time. But as I went through life, I went through the military, went through college. I lived with 8 guys in college, so you can imagine what that party was like. You know, you 6 football players, 2 baseball players, and it wasn't much school, but it was a lot of partying. I tried to move away when I was 19 years old because I started getting in trouble. So I, my sister lived in Alameda, and I moved up to the Bay Area, which I hated, but I landed a good job. I landed a job in the shipyards for a year, and but it wasn't 6 months later, my friends that I went to college with in transferred and went to Hayward University. So 6 months later, I'm with the, you know, some friends that I grew up with again, and the partying started. You know, I just went right back to my old ways, you know, and you know, if they had it, we would do it. You know, it didn't always have to just, you know, there was a lot of things that I did that, you know, most of the time my drug of choice is alcohol, but you know what, if you had other things, you know, that just what made the party more fun, you know. It just made it, I loved going fast, you know, and so, and most people would never know because I've never been little. You know, most people that go fast are kind of skinny, but I've never been skinny. So, but you know what? I can't say through my drinking careers, I went through the military. 4 years in the military, got honorable discharge, and same thing there. You know, somebody was always looking out for me. You know, my first sergeant liked me, and so he always come and got me out of jail when I'd get put in jail for fighting in the bars and stuff. And so that was just another drinking. My first bout with AA was in the military. I didn't really think about it until after I started reading the big book. And they said more will be revealed, you know, because I went through a program when I was in the military, because to stay out of trouble, I had to go through this program, you know, and it was like, I didn't even realize that that's what I was going through until I got here. And I came home in 1986, and I landed a job, you know, a pretty prominent job for the area. And I won't mention his name, but one of my supervisors is sitting in the room tonight, and he was good to me. You know, I can look back at that, and he was real good to me. He took care of me. Another one of those deals. You know, I was a hard worker, and people knew that when they asked me to get something done, it would get done. And but it was another one of them deals that somebody was there to take care of me. And so about 1990, I think it was 1990, we had a drug bust at the job where I work. And I had been clean. I got married in 1988. 1990, my ex-wife was pregnant with my first child. And they came in and got me at work and said that I was doing some things. And when I first started there, I was doing some things that I wasn't supposed to be doing. But I'd been clean for 2 years. So I had to fight. And I ended up keeping my job, fortunately, you know, that I lost about 7 months worth of work. And I went out and drove a tractor and ate dirt for those 7 months and did some hard labor work. And I was, you know, like I said, I was never scared of that. So I still was able to pay the bills and make it through. But, you know, it's the only time in my life that I had to go and sign up for welfare and sign up for assistance because I didn't have insurance. And my ex-wife was 7 months pregnant with my child. And that was a scary time, you know, to think that here I was sober for 2 years and I got fired for something that I'd done previously. And but it all worked out. God took care of me, you know, even though I didn't realize God was taking care of me, because God is my higher power. He was taking care of me then. And so I was married for 18 years. This is when it gets hard for me, because I thought as a husband and as a father, I was doing the right things. And one of my friends, it's one of them four friends that's in this program with me, told me one day, quit whining. He said, maybe she just didn't want to be married to you, you know. And I finally, that's what woke me up, and I thought about it, you know. It was, you know, it was right. You know, I wanted to be married to her, but she didn't want to be married to me, you know. So when he said that to me, it opened my eyes. And but in turn, when I found out she was doing what she was doing to me, I made my children and my wife stand there, and I took a shotgun and stuck it to her head and pulled the trigger. And it didn't go off. And I made my kids stay there and endure that. And it's not something that I'm proud of today. And the bad thing about it, she works for the sheriff's department. And, you know, and when you think about what you're doing, you know, I didn't think about what I was doing at the time. You know, because here I was married for 18 years, and we didn't even keep alcohol in our house. I've been sober for 16 years. And so at that point in my life, I chose to get a divorce. And I left her with the kids, and I left her, you know, I had to, because my friend came and got the gun, the sheriff's. They came and asked, and she, fortunately, she didn't press charges against me. And but to this day, I don't know where that gun's at. It's a gun that I bought in Germany. It was given to my son, and he has it somewhere else, and I'm glad, because at that time in my life, I was very unstable. And through all this, I kept my job. You know, I've been able to work, but when I got the divorce, I started drinking, and it was just to socialize. When I started drinking, when I started drinking again, it was just like I was 23 years old all over again. My alcohol, my drinking. I still stayed away from the drugs, but my drinking took off, and I drank for 6 years straight. And finally, one day, you know, because I, you know, fortunately, everything to me happens for a reason. And I got to spend the last 2 years of my life with my dad while my dad was dying. And so by getting that divorce, I got to be there with my dad. And when he died, he was happy. You know, he had a smile on his face, and he got to tell me bye and that he appreciated everything I did for him. And that made me, you know, but it still didn't stop me from drinking. And the week before I went in that rehab, you know, that last drunk, I went and played cards with my brother and another friend of mine, and his sister works with me. And on the way home from playing cards, I almost went head on with a busload of young kids in a pickup. If it wasn't for my brother yanking the wheel, we would have probably killed some of them kids. And I got home, and my mom, my mom never said nothing to me. She never, you know, because my mom was as scared as I was. She didn't want to lose me, because I was the one working. I was the one paying the bills. And if she knew, if she pissed me off or said something to me, that I might leave. And so she would never say nothing to me. She always kept her mouth shut about my drinking. And then finally that one night she told me, she said, son, and my mom, I'm very close with my mom and dad. I love them very much. And my mother said, you know, you're my rock. You know, you're that big rock that's always been there. And she said, "You're crumbling." And when my mom said that to me, it was that was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was the thing that I needed to help me understand that I needed to get some help. And so at that point is when I put myself in that 30-day rehab. And I took the softer, easier way. It was I didn't really learn that much in there, but I learned enough to get me pointed in the right direction. And when I come back from there, you know, the very first night I came out of there, I went to a meeting. They dropped me off at the Union Hall, and they happened to be having their Monday night meeting at that facility. And I was able to go into that meeting, and like I said earlier, I was fortunate enough that I got four of my best friends that are in this program. That for that first year, I think me and Bobby, I think we did probably 700 meetings for the first year. You know, there was days that we would go to four or five meetings in the day, and it was just, that's where I belonged. You know, because when I'd get up in the morning, I didn't have no spirituality. I knew what church was, but I didn't have no spirituality at that time in my life. And by coming in these rooms and going to that many meetings, and I started learning and hearing stuff, and like them CDs that they put on the back table. You know, I picked one up one day, and it said to read page 85, 86, 87. And which is step 11, and said, try to read that for 30 days. And I did that because that's what stuck with me. And another time, another guy said in a meeting that, you know, try to go out there and do something for somebody that you're not wanting something back, you know. And I started doing that. And so these little suggestions that were being made to me through people that I became friends with in these meetings, I started taking suggestions. I found my first sponsor about 5 or 6 months into the program. I picked my first sponsor, and ironically enough that I didn't know it, but his sobriety date was the same exact day as mine. You know, don't tell, that's kind of ironic that you would pick somebody and you'd both have the same exact sobriety date. But in turn, that person had got sick and couldn't spend a lot of time with me, and he asked me to try to find another sponsor, so I did. And I found my second sponsor. This is about 6 to 8 months into it, you know, but I'm still not willing to understand this program. I'm still not willing to listen to other people, you know, because this guy started wanting me to do all, he wanted me to do service here for 6 months, and I did, and he wanted me to do this, and he wanted me to do that, and I was, you know, that ego part of me started kicking in. Who's this guy think he is telling me what to do? You know, and basically he wasn't telling me to do nothing. He was asking me that if I did these things, it could help me stay sober. And but at that point, I wasn't willing to keep that person as a sponsor because he wanted me to do too much. And so after fighting with it for about 2 weeks, I finally got the nerve up to go and tell him that I was going to fire him as my sponsor. And, you know, I apologized. And, you know, and he said, "Well, you don't have to apologize. If you didn't want to be my sponsee, we can still be friends." I said, "You just go find you somebody that you relate to." So here I beat myself up for 2 weeks thinking I was going to hurt this guy's feelings, you know, and he just blew me off like, "Hey, if that's the way it is, that's just the way it is. But as long as you stay sober, that's the good thing about it." And I just laughed after that, you know, because at that point in my life, I finally found a sponsor that I related to, and he's from Porterville. His name's Greg G. And he has a heck of a story. And my grand sponsor was Tom, and he passed away about a year and a half after I was in the program, and they both, not only did I get what I needed from the first two sponsors, I started getting them being willing to listen after 9 months to get what I needed to understand this program. And I started going through the steps with him, and we went through the first three steps. And basically, when I start having problems, all I got to do is go back to the first step, because my life was unmanageable and I was powerless over alcohol. And then with my fourth step, you know, it was not hard for me because I didn't have a lot of amends. I had a lot of friends. I did have the amends to make to my ex-wife, which I tried to do after I come back from the rehab. So then I had to go back and redo it again, because it's not good to try to make amends when you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So, in turn, after I got into the program and into the big book, you know, I can say this too. I read the big book's probably the first big book, or the first book I've ever read. Because I was one of them guys going through school that, you know what, I knew I could read the chapter, go to the back of the book, and get the answers. And I tried that with the big book, and it didn't work, because the answers are throughout the big book. And what I found through doing the steps is, you know, I was trying to do the steps and finish the steps. Well, it came to be revealed to me that you don't really finish the steps. I'm going to be doing the steps the rest of my life. So if I want to live with principles and morals, then I got to live by the steps of this program. And in turn, when I start having problems, best thing for me to do is to open the big book to any page, read some of the big book, and see what I get out of it. Because most of the time when I do that, it settles my brain down, it settles me down, and gives me some serenity that I have today that I never had. You know, I have confidence in myself today. Even though I always thought I had a lot of confidence, you know, I was big guy that was just scared of the world. You know, my way of dealing, when I was growing up, my way of dealing was with things, because I was big and strong, was, you know, when you pissed me off, then you could either whoop me or I was going to whoop you. And you know, and it was no, getting a whooping was not no big deal, because I had two bigger brothers that, you know, I got my lumps before I got to be older. And but in turn, today I have such serenity in my life from being reading the big book and having a sponsor that I can turn to when I have problems. You know, I look at things today, and I just, it's amazing that for the past 3 years at work, I haven't had an argument, not with one person. I don't think I've had an argument with anyone for the past 3 years. You know, and I may not have liked the way somebody said stuff or did stuff, but you know what? It's not none of my business what they do. It's only my business what I do. And, you know, I've tried to help different people. You know, when I'm asked to do service to me, yes, it's secretary meetings, it's helping do coffee, it's helping set up buildings, it's, you know, all the things that you need to do, but it's also when somebody calls you in the middle of the night wanting to talk. You know, that's service to me, because, you know, when I was drinking, I didn't want nobody call me late at night. I didn't want to talk to nobody late at night. And you know what, it can wait till tomorrow. But I can say that one time I had early in sobriety, there was a young man that has passed away today, but he called me late at night, and I told him I would see him the next morning, and that day never came. Because he got back on a train and he rode it to Stockton and he drank a fifth of whiskey and took too many pills and he died. So you know, I think about that. You know, it wasn't my choice to do those things. It wasn't my choice to drink the alcohol. It wasn't my choice to take the pills. But, you know, if I had got up out of bed and went and talked to that young man and he didn't jump on that train, we may have could have saved his life. And, you know, so I think about those things. I got a sister that's in the program today that I had to watch her walk down the street in old flip-flops. And, you know, that's hard, you know, and to have to watch your loved ones. And you want to help so bad, but you don't want to enable them. And getting to read the big book and being around people that show me what to do with somebody that has an addiction, I have some answers today. They're not perfect, but you know what? If I'm willing to help, then I may be able, and if I help one person, you know, I've accomplished something today, and that's pretty amazing to me, you know, because it's being unselfish and being true to other people that really, I don't know, it's hard to explain the peace that it gives you when you're able to help somebody else and not expect nothing in return. And that's where I'm at today. I threw the fourth step. I did my amends. I did my character defects, and I went through it with my sponsor. I went through the 12 steps. It may not have been perfect, but you know what? I do understand today that I can always go back and do the 12 steps again. And that's where I'm at in my sobriety. I have had continuous sobriety for a little over 3 years. I don't look in the present. I don't go to the past. I don't look in the present, and I don't get too far in the future, because I know when I do those kind of things that it's really not reality, because what's happening today is what's going on. What's going to happen tomorrow, I don't know what's there. And what happened yesterday, I can't fix anyway. So, you know, it's just where we're at, you know, and I want to enjoy life, you know, and I do enjoy life today. I went back to school. I got one more year at the job that I'm at that I've been there almost 31 years, and I get to retire at 53 years old next year. And I went back to school to start another career. And, you know, I was so fearful of going and getting those contractor's license that, you know, for 5 years I put it off when I was drinking because I was scared to death I was going to fail. But, you know, after I got sober, you think about, well, what was they going to do to you if you failed the test anyway? They're going to ask you for $60 more and take the test again. So it's like, what am I scared of? Today I'm not scared. Today, you know, life is just life. I enjoy it to the fullest. I enjoy people to the fullest. And my suggestions to all of you is to get into service. You know, if you're not doing some kind of service, try to do some kind of service. Try to stay involved with the functions that take place. You know, I know Richie Barnes coming up. They have the summer picnic. They got during New Year's. I know it's past, but the New Year's Eve dance, you know, all that stuff that takes place, because, you know, for a full year, I had to stay away from any of my old friends. I had my friends that would call me and ask me to go fishing. I had my friends that would call me and ask me to go help them coach football. I did that for 13 years. I coached high school football for 3 and youth football for 9 or 10, whatever it was. I know it's a total of about 13 years. And I had to stay away from all the things that I did in my whole life because I had to change the way I lived. It was not a choice. You know, it was my choice to change the way I lived, because if I didn't, I would go back and do the things that I used to do, because that's just the way I lived. You know, I mean, hell, if we go hang around with the people, you know, it's like my mom always used to tell me, you know, you hang around with the bad crowd, most likely you're going to get in trouble. And that's usually the truth, you know, because who you hang around with is usually what happens, you know. And I always looked at, you know, that's what's funny, too, as you think about it, is I always put myself up on a pedestal, you know. I was better than them guys that were out there, you know. I was hanging around with the rich people, you know. And until I was going down the road in that from that rehab, and we was going to a meeting, and God stepped in and gave me my first God shot. I seen a young man walking down the street, and he had sweatpants on, and he was carrying a brown paper bag. And I'm sitting there in this van, nice, comfortable, warm van, dressed nice, and I chills just ran down my spine, because when I looked at this kid, I seen myself. I thought, that's where you're going to be if you don't change your ways. And even though I had a good job, and you know, I knew that's where I was going. You know, because it wasn't that is where I wanted to be, but that's where it was taking me. You know, I told myself, and I know it's Alcoholics Anonymous, but I told myself I'd never do drugs again. And the best thing that ever happened to me is the week before I came into this program, I did some cocaine and stuff again. That made me have a nervous breakdown. Because I told myself I would never do that stuff again. I told myself that it was one of them things like the night when I had my last drunk. I was on that verge of, I'm not going to drink tonight. You know, I'm just going to go play cards, but the other guys can drink. And before the night was over, I was drunk. You know, so all those things that were in my past, I had to let go. And I have different, you know, like I said, I was fortunate enough to have the four guys that I hang out with that are sober today that I grew up with. So I still get to hang around with the four of my good friends that I partied with my whole life. I played sports with my whole life. And I even got to watch one of my friends die one night in secretary of Thursday night meeting. And I got to watch him fall over and die. And we got to do CPR on him and revive him. And it was an amazing thing that, you know, the doctor told him if you hadn't been sitting in the chair you were sitting in, you'd probably be dead today, because right next to him was a doctor. He's at an AA meeting sitting next to a doctor. His heart stops. He falls out. And the doctor's able to let us help him do CPR to keep him alive until the ambulance can get there. And the doctor told him, he said, you'd be dead today had you not went to that AA meeting. You know, I might as well have been dead a long time ago, because the way I was living, I was dead anyway. You know, that's the way my life was. You know, even though I had a good outer appearance, I was dead on the inside. And, you know, life's good today. I hope you can get what I've got. I have serenity in my life today, and I only wish good things for you out there. The newcomers, hey, just keep coming back. I know you hear that a lot, but, you know, it's a true statement. You know, it's a very true statement. You know, if you're here, you're not out getting drunk. You know, I only drank to be social, but, you know, that was just a good word for I'm a drunk. You know, that's the way I look at that. You know, yeah, I drank to be social, but I just didn't want to admit I was a drunk. So today I can. I was a drunk. Today I'll always be a drunk. I'll be an alcoholic the rest of my life. I have a disease that tried to take me down, and I have to fight with it every day to keep me on the right side of the street. So with that, I'll close, and I thank you for listening to me.